culture to politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And what a great day to celebrate something that a lot of people have been longing for, which is the authorization from the CDC that if you have been vaccinated, if you've gotten your two vaccines of Pfizer, Moderna, or your one vaccine of Johnson & Johnson, hey, go about your business. No more need for masks. The President of the United States, Joe Biden, is speaking about that right now. Here is the President live.
Wear a mask until you do. It's vaccinated or masked. Get vaccinated. If you're vaccinated, you can be around the vaccinated or unvaccinated people. But if you're not vaccinated or not fully vaccinated, you should wear a mask for your own protection and the protection of other unvaccinated people. The choice is yours. You all made this possible. Now let's finish the work of beating this virus and getting everything back to normal. Remember, as fast as we've gone, most people under the age of 65 aren't vaccinated yet. We've opened vaccinations nationally to all adults just 4 weeks ago. It's going to take a little more time for everyone who wants to get vaccinated to get their shots. So all of us, let's be patient. Be patient with one another. You know, some may say, just feel more comfortable. Continue to wear a mask. They may feel that way. So if you're someone with a mask, you see them, please treat them with kindness and respect. We've had too much conflict, too much bitterness, too much anger, too much politicization of this issue about wearing masks. Let's put it to rest. Let's remember, we're all Americans. Let's remember that we are all in this together. If you're fully vaccinated and can take your mask off, you've earned the right to do something that Americans are known for all around the world. Greeting others with a smile. With a smile. So, it's a good day for the country. We aren't done yet. We're still losing too many Americans because we still have too many unvaccinated people. We have to get to 70% of adults started on vaccinations by July the 4th. And we have to take this pandemic, tackle it, not just here, but overseas as well, to truly be safe in the long run. There's still more work ahead. But I've said many times, as tough as this pandemic has been, we will get through it. We will rebuild our economy, reclaim our lives, and get back to normal. We'll laugh again. We'll know joy again. And we'll smile again. You know, and now, see one other smile. Look at the smiles on other people's faces. Better days are ahead, I promise you. And the best days for America are still to come. I promise you that as well. Thank you, God bless you, and remember, it's never, ever, ever, ever been a good bet to bet against the American people. Thank you.
That was President Biden this morning. He opened his remarks just moments before we went to him. Do we have the opening of what the president had to say?
Center for Disease Control and Prevention and the CDC announced that they are no longer recommending that fully vaccinated people need wear masks. This recommendation holds true whether you are inside or outside. I think it's a great milestone, a great day. It's been made possible by the extraordinary success we've had in vaccinating so many Americans so quickly. To date, we've given out 250 million shots in 114 days. And we're seeing the results. Cases are down in 49 of 50 states. New York Times has reported that hospitalizations are the lowest they've been since April of 2020, over a year ago, right after the start of the pandemic. Deaths are down 80%, and also at their lowest level since April of 2020. And as the virus tragically rages in other countries, as other nations, even wealthy nations, are mired in the challenges of slow vaccine rollout and poor economic conditions, as a result, things are very different here. In less than 4 months, we've gone from 5.5% to nearly 60% of the adults in America with at least one shot in their arm. We've gone from stagnation to an economy that is growing faster than it has in nearly 40 years. We've gone from an anemic job creation to a record for job creation for a new administration. All of this is a product of prompt action to roll out the vaccine and boost our economy. As I said in my joint address to the Congress, this vaccination effort has been a historic logistical achievement for the United States of America. Over the past 114 days, our vaccination program has led the world. And that's due to the incredible hard work of so many people, the scientists and researchers, the drug companies, the National Guard, the U.S. military, FEMA, the nation's governors, doctors, nurses, pharmacists, everyone who has moved heaven and earth to get as many shots in the arms of as many Americans as possible. And it's truly been an all hands on deck for the country effort. You know, some people said we couldn't do this.
The one thing that again, he seems to be allergic to doing it. When he talks about an all-hands-on-deck effort, good. He's not just claiming credit for his administration. But why not add, this has been the work of governors, outstanding governors, Republicans as well as Democrats. He could say that. Why not give the Trump administration credit for actually developing that Operation Warp Speed? In other words, if President Biden is right, and I think he is, that we should have as a national goal getting as many people vaccinated as we possibly can. And that would be good for the country and would make life begin to feel normal again. If he wants to do that, aren't there some people who are resisting vaccines precisely because of their loyalty to Donald Trump? If he made the case that it was because of Trump we developed these particular vaccines, that Trump himself has gotten vaccinated even after he actually battled the disease successfully. Trump and Melania and Ivanka and all the little Trumps, and everybody's gotten vaccines, right? Because a good thing to do. And honestly, the one problem, and I think that it was a very big problem President Trump had when he was president, was whenever he did one of those briefings, he would never try to make it nonpartisan. It was always very political. It was the Trump administration. It was us. Biden's kind of doing the same thing. And it's a mistake. And if he doesn't want to give credit for Trump, get Mitch McConnell up there. Get Kevin McCarthy up there. Get somebody up there to make it clear this is not a partisan issue, for goodness sake. I mean, we're talking about health and survival, and the ability to lead lives in the country. By the way, the market is up sharply today, and it's up very sharply. And why? Well, maybe the fears of inflation were oversold. We'll talk about rising inflation. On the Medved Show, there is a great deal going on, and one of the things that's going on is an event in Everett, Washington, which we need to find more about. But the headline over in the Seattle Times is "Bystander Kills Man Acting Out in Everett." The bystander who killed the guy with a gun has not been charged with anything. Why not? Listen to the story. It says a man walking his dog near Silver Lake in Everett was fatally shot on Tuesday of this week after acting aggressively toward other people on the sidewalk. He was shot by a bystander who intervened. Now, you hear that, and it sounds like, well, this guy acting aggressively, a little bit like, it wasn't just that. They are, for whatever reason, understating what apparently this incident involved. It says the man who was shot had been walking his dog on the sidewalk around Silver Lake around 3:30 p.m. when, with no apparent provocation, he started yelling and became aggressive toward people walking on the sidewalk around the lake, including one grandmother and her young granddaughter. This is from the police. Several nearby men attempted to intervene, but the man walking his dog responded by pepper spraying and then striking them with a metal baton. Okay, that's not acting aggressively. That's assault. If you're hitting somebody with a metal baton and you're pepper spraying them, there's something wrong. One of the men who attempted to intervene to protect the grandmother and her granddaughter was armed with a pistol, and he shot the dog walker twice. The injured man, who was described as being in his 30s, was taken to a nearby hospital where he died. The shooter willingly submitted to an interview with detectives, and so did numerous witnesses. Everett Animal Control has assumed custody of the dog. The shooting victim's identity, as well as the cause and manner of death, will be released by Snohomish County Medical Examiner, but so far no charges. Now, what does it highlight, and why is it ever worth paying any attention to? Because my guess would be that the person who was shot, who was striking a stranger with a metal baton and yelling aggressively to a number of people in the area while he was trying to walk a dog, probably had some severe mental problems, which happens. And again, this is, of course, the main cause of the homeless flood everywhere, where providing a hotel room doesn't help someone who is severely mentally ill. And it's too early, of course. We will find out more about this incident, but it's terrible. It's terrible when anybody dies. But it's also terrible when we downplay the apocalypse of insanity that seems to be prevailing in our society, where we now have the conviction that this entire thing that feeds the homeless epidemic very directly, that people have a right to act out, as they say in the headline. And honestly, that's no way to live. Not if you're assaulting a grandmother and a granddaughter and then a guy who's just trying to protect them. If anybody has any background on this particular issue, you can give us a call. 1-800-955-1776. A different type of craziness. And there's a column, and it's a very balanced, judicious, well-expressed column by a friend of mine, Chris Vance. Chris Vance is a former state party chair in Washington of the Republican Party and a former Republican member of the King County Council. And he was our candidate for U.S. Senate. What was it, 2 years ago or 4 years ago? And Chris has left the Republican Party, and he did that a while ago. And now he's one of the people who's involved with trying to start this new party, maybe. I'm concerned about it because it would be disastrous. It would be disastrous for conservatives, it would be disastrous for Republicans, and it will achieve nothing. He writes in the Seattle Times today, "This week I joined with dozens of prominent current and former Republicans, including former U.S. Representatives Barbara Comstock of Virginia and Charlie Dent of Pennsylvania, former Governor Bill Weld of Massachusetts." He was the Libertarian candidate for vice president in 2016. Ambassador Jim Glassman, who is involved with the Bush Library down in Texas, former Secretary of Transportation Mary Peters, former Director of Homeland Security Michael Chertoff, and others. And we announced our support for a manifesto. That's always dangerous. The manifesto is a call for American renewal. And we pledged ourselves to either reimagine a party dedicated to our founding ideals or else hasten the creation of such an alternative. In other words, over time, we seek to either restore or replace the Republican Party. Restore is fine. That can work. Parties have changed. The Republican Party was greatly restored in between the Goldwater election, which was a disaster for Republicans at every level of government all over the country, and the Nixon winning the nomination, and then very much fully restored by Reagan winning the nomination. He says, millions of us are now politically homeless. We believe there's a demand for a third option, for a movement dedicated to core American principles, specifically a movement or party which supports a free, open society in which everyone can go as far as their efforts and talents will take them, in a free market economy that welcomes America's growing diversity, is committed to energetic American leadership around the world, and etc. Basically, core Republican ideas. But the idea that this is going to be brought about by starting a new party or a new organized faction in a party, I mean, honestly, when you look at the differences on issues, right now, the biggest challenge for Republicans is confronting a Biden agenda, which is going to spend us into very dangerous economic territory. Even though the market is up today, the inflation figures that we talked about yesterday are really threatening. And a number of people have brought up with the gas lines. I think the gas lines are going to be temporary, but we will get to that. But with the gas lines and the inflation, it's beginning to feel like Jimmy Carter redux. Jimmy Carter, however, actually had his biggest triumph in the Middle East. He did. The negotiating peace between Egypt and Israel. So what happens with the Republican Party in California? We'll be speaking to a candidate for governor coming up. Michael Medved show, if the Republican Party can actually come together and revive itself and upgrade its act in the state of California, we could be looking ahead to a national vision of real Republican dominance. Somebody who's trying to make that happen and has some pretty unbelievable polling news from California is Kevin Faulkner, who was a two-time mayor of San Diego. He won two terms in a city with just 24% Republican voter registration. He is now, I believe, the leading Republican candidate to replace Governor Newsom, the ultra-liberal Democrat who runs the state at the moment. Mayor Faulkner, it's a pleasure to meet you on the phone, and congratulations on that new poll that showed things about as close as they could be on the recall, right?
It is. Well, Michael, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you. And look, I think you hit the nail on the head. Californians are ready for a change out here in this state, and they want somebody who's actually going to step up with some real solutions, not worry about being politically correct, and who can actually get some real results. So we're very enthused with that. And look, we're very enthused about the opportunity to turn the state around.
It shows your poll shows 47% of Californians ready to vote Newsom out of office. Now, That's getting awfully close. As you also have a tax plan that I think a lot of Americans everywhere would be excited about. I mean, Newsom's plan is to use the state budget surplus. That's right, surplus. They have a $75 billion surplus to send people checks in the mail if they earn below $75,000. Your tax plan would help a whole lot more people. How would it do it?
Yeah, well, of course it would. And I think that's the fundamental difference. And I'm glad you talked, Michael, about the surplus that we have in California. $75 billion over the next 3 years. That's money, Michael, that should be staying in Californians' pockets and not be sent to Sacramento. Our state is just too expensive. And Michael, I'll tell you, people are voting with their feet. They are leaving. And you name the state, whether it's Nevada, Texas, you know, Florida, you know, Tennessee, we can go down the list. And so instead of what we saw Gavin Newsom doing, which is wanting to give people a one-time check, what we really need in California is lasting tax relief. And so what I'm proposing and what I think is really catching fire here in California is the largest middle-class tax reduction ever proposed in California. Why? Because we need it. And so, you know, very specifically, you know, our goal is very simple. If you're a middle-income earner, or if you're an individual making $50,000 or less, or a family making $100,000 or less, you will not pay state income taxes. And that's going to be, I think, a sea change in California. As I said, we have to be more competitive. And, you know, instead of the $600 that Gavin Newsom is talking about, this is going to give individuals in California nearly $2,000 a year to stay in their pocket, and a family can save close to $4,000 a year. And that's real money. That's, you know, 8 months of utilities, 8 months of groceries, or, you know, 92 tanks of gas out here in California. So, look, we need to have a governor that understands we have to give relief to Californians and not what we continue to see from Gavin Newsom and Sacramento politicians, which is their solution to every problem is please send more money to Sacramento.
What I love about this plan is it helps absolutely everybody. In other words, there may be some people listening to us or think, oh, I guess I'm not eligible to be helped because I earn, my wife and I together earn $100,000 or more. But this actually makes the first $100,000 that anybody earns tax exempt, tax free, right?
It does. And to your point, Michael, 99% of California households who pay income taxes will get a tax cut. And it is time for this. Again, where we are seeing our expenses, you know, out of control. It's absolutely out of control in California. And this is a tax cut for young people just starting out, for parents who are trying to, you know, pay for diapers or college, depending upon your where you are. And for, you know, everybody's working long days to put food on the table. This tax cut's for them, it's broad, it's aimed at our middle class, and one goal. We have to make California more affordable.
Is one way to do that to put up a great big stop sign on that, what is it now, $150 billion high-speed rail between Merced and Bakersfield?
A huge stop sign. Boy, you want to talk about throwing good money after bad. This boondoggle is costing Californians $3.5 million a day, Michael. It's nuts. It's crazy. That is a great example of why, you know, of where we're wasting money. And I'll tell you, I've also been outspoken not only about the bullet train, which you rightfully point out, but also the fact it got, unfortunately, a lot of attention, but rightfully so, the fact that in California, this year alone, we had $30 billion with a B, in fraud from our employment development department, going out fraudulently to prisoners, all kinds of folks. Can you imagine? And so to see, you know, Gavin Newsom in the legislature, in the face of all of this, that says, continues to say, Californians, we want you to pay more. Again, that's why I think that we're on to something, that we're really tapped into, you know, what Californians want to see differently. And by the way, this is, you know, this is going to be Democrats, Republicans, and independents all coming together to say, we want to change at the top. One-party rule in California has not served our state well over the last decade.
to say the least, the first time in California history since it became a state in 1850, first time ever California actually losing representation because people are moving away. Speaking of moving away, I have to ask you something. This is kind of personal, but when I was a kid, I went to Boy Scouts. I was a scout and very proud to be. And our scout troop was at Point Loma Presbyterian Church, which I think is the church you attend, isn't it?
It is indeed. Wow, I did not know that about you.
Yeah, no, I lived. I did my first year of high school at Point Loma High School, and then I was part of that scout troop. That's a building. It's a beautiful old-style building right down the street from Point Loma High School, right?
Yeah, and in fact, I got married in that church. So there you go. A little fun fact.
Well, so naturally, I'm going to support you. But I was supporting you anyway because I know what you did for San Diego. And again, this is a new birth of freedom for the people of California. And I do want to say that you should read about Kevin Faulkner, who he is, what he does, what he has on offer. And you might be a little bit more ready to take on the challenges of a very Democratic legislature than, say, a TV reality star?
Well, I'll tell you, Michael, thank you. And look, I've had experience doing that. Look, as a proud Republican who won in a deep blue city of San Diego, second largest city in California. And oh, by the way, all of the changes and positive reforms that we were able to get through our balanced budgets, I did it with a majority Democratic city council. So I know what it takes to go out there and win that argument publicly and then to win the vote and to get real results. And when you do that, that's how not only you can be successful in a city like San Diego, but all throughout California. So I think people are hungry for this change. I think they're ready for a governor who's actually going to roll up the sleeves and actually get to work and not one that spends all his time virtue signaling and not getting anything done.
And virtue signaling at the laundry restaurant, not so much. That, of course, it could be the worst meal of Governor Newsom's life, but that's another story. Hey, we're going to put information about your tax proposal and about your campaign and about, again, your record of achievement in the city of San Diego. We're going to put it on our website at michaelmedved.com. I think for any conservative, it is incredibly exciting to think about having a true free market, pro-American, conservative governor of the People's Republic of California. Wouldn't that shake things up? Check it out at michaelmedved.com. Godspeed to you, Mayor Faulkner. We'll talk later. And on the Michael Medved show, attention after speaking, and a very encouraging conversation to me, because Mayor Faulkner, mayor of San Diego, two terms, running for governor. And right now, he's showing in the most recent nonpartisan, non-affiliated poll, Kevin Faulkner is getting more than three times the number of votes of Caitlyn Jenner. And we'll see. They both should draw all sorts of people to the polls to vote to recall Governor Newsom, which honestly, it would electrify and I think unite the Republican Party to see a real alternative to that one-party misrule that goes on in California. Okay, with all that going on, there's something else going on in California. A sometime resident of San Francisco is coming out with a big new book. And I would love to have him on the show to describe his book, because Colin Kaepernick is both the editor and he's contributed an essay for a wonderful book called Abolition for the People. And you might think, well, wait a minute, abolition was accomplished by Wendell Phillips and William Lloyd Garrison and famous abolitionists of the 19th century. They got rid of slavery. Ultimately, Actually, it was President Lincoln in the Republican Party and a very serious war that got rid of slavery. But this is not about slavery. This is the title, the full title of his new book is Abolition for the People, the Movement for a Future Without Policing and Prisons. And the cover shows a sort of cartoon version of a young black woman holding up a banner that says, abolish the police, close the prisons. Over 30 voices for the people. I don't know if anybody has even pulled this. I am very sure that even in the black community, the idea of abolishing the police and abolishing prisons is not popular. Colin Kaepernick begins his work by saying, in order to eradicate anti-blackness, we must also abolish the police. TMZ is reporting that's the core message of a new book being published by the NFL quarterback who's arguing for the abolition of policing in prisons. The book is set to drop this October, and it features 30 essays, including one from Colin himself. Kaepernick also served as editor on the project, which will be available in hard copy, audiobook, and ebook for all of your Christmas giving. And Kaepernick states the omnipresent threat of premature death at the hands, knees, chokeholds, tasers, and guns of law enforcement has only further ingrained its anti-black foundation into the institutions of policing. The omnipresent threat of premature death at the hands of police officers? Do you know that at a very, very minimum, a black young man is 300 times more likely to die from a murder by a civilian than to die by anyone in law enforcement? And then again, he says, Colin Kaepernick, he says, in order to eradicate anti-blackness, we must abolish the police. The abolition of one without the other is impossible. In other words, he's saying that we will remain a racist country as long as the police force continues to do its job. Isn't it if you have one group in the population that is overwhelmingly overrepresented in victimhood by crime, who would suffer most? Who does suffer most wherever they defund the police? It's obviously people in communities of color. And you can look at the numbers. You look at the experience in Baltimore, which we were talking about yesterday. This is so insane. And TMZ writes that one person familiar with the book says the conversation Colin wants to have with his readers is essentially this. How do we reimagine and re-envision keeping communities safe without a militarized police presence? So without a militarized police presence, who does keep communities safe? Is it just goodwill? People would be so grateful that the police went away, that all of a sudden people would behave in a universally wholesome and safe and respectful way. It's madness. And it seems to me that it's very dangerous madness. Speaking of madness, there is the problem of fuel at the pump. Earlier today, even before he made his statements about the new news regarding the CDC and the attempts to try to allow maskless conduct. Even before that, President Biden had this to say about the rise in the pump in the gas prices and why Americans should feel confident and reassured about it. Listen to the President of the United States.
Don't panic, number one.
I know seeing lines at the pumps or gas stations with no gas can be extremely stressful. But this is a temporary situation. Do not get more gas than you need in the next few days. As I said, we expect the situation to begin to improve by the weekend and into early next week, and gasoline supply is coming back online, and panic buying will only slow the process. And I also want to say something to the gas stations. Do not, I repeat, do not try to take advantage of consumers during this time. I'm going to work with governors in the affected states to put a stop to price gouging wherever it arises.
Okay, let's hope, though today in a suburban Seattle gas station, there were people who were paying, and willingly, $4.40 a gallon, which is shocking. I yesterday actually found gas, and this was on Wednesday of this week, for $3.29 a gallon. Now, that's lower than normal, but there's a magic to it. If you want to go and you're willing to drive a few extra miles to find affordable gas. A lot of people have been talking about this resembling Jimmy Carter, as we mentioned earlier. The problem for Jimmy Carter was there was an Arab oil boycott, and it was... wow, that paragraph you just sent me, Jeremy, that's Biden today? Oh, yeah, this is Jimmy Carter actually talking about this during his presidential term, which was 1977 to 1981. Jimmy Carter said, "It's clear that the true problems of our nation are much deeper, deeper than gasoline lines or energy shortages, deeper than even than inflation or recession. And I realized more than ever that as president, I need your help. So I decided to reach out and to listen to the voices of America." That was from his malaise speech, where he never actually used the word malaise. But he was talking about this degeneration of the national mood. And President Reagan was talking about, well, actually, he used the slogan, "Make America Great Again." And Carter saying it is a crisis of confidence. Look, right now, I think that Biden is calling attention to this gas thing because it probably is temporary based upon that extraordinary cyber attack on oil distribution in this country. But that cyber attack actually should highlight a couple of things. First of all, we need to invest more money and far more attention in cybersecurity because it is a real danger to national security. And the Russians may not be good at very much. They have a technologically laggard society. The Chinese, too, perhaps. But for goodness sake, we have to be prepared. And there's a U.S. government agency, meanwhile, that is warning that one aspect of the gas shortage that could be deadly. Well, we'll get to that. It involves plastic bags. And what would you use the plastic bag for? We will get to that. We'll also be speaking to Alan Dershowitz about any prospect for peace in the Middle East. We're making this the last war between Israel and Hamas for the sake of this greatest nation on God's green.